I call Senate Appropriations to order this morning. Happy Ash Wednesday.
Going all the way back to 1889, and we pay out the interest and dividends on an annual basis to our beneficiaries. One of those beneficiaries since 1889 has been the Department of Corrections and Juvenile Training Programs, which has been involved the facility at Plankinton and other things within the Department of Corrections. And so one of the things that came up on the House side was how much money were in some of these funds. And for your guys' purposes within BFM, these funds are kept within Company 5018 and invested by the South Dakota Investment Council. And so there's not a breakdown in the BFM system, a breakdown of the trust fund balances by entity. And so I've provided that for you on the back page. And the reason that is that way is there's a Company 5018 is created by Statute 5-10-1, but Article 8, Section 8 of the Constitution requires me as Commissioner of School and Public Lands to keep individual accounts for each entity. And so what you see on the back page are our internal between School and Public Lands and the South Dakota Investment Council, our internal balances as of February 2017 for each of those. And you'll see Fund 717 is Department of Corrections Juvenile Training Programs. There's $1.9 million in that fund. And so pending the sale of this property, those funds would go into that, grow that fund by whatever the proceeds would be, and then we would continue to pay out the interest and dividends that we would receive from the South Dakota Investment Council on an annual basis. Tomorrow morning, won't talk about Plankinton yet, but tomorrow morning those funds are going to the same place. And so if both of those sales were to proceed, those funds would significantly increase that balance. And an example or a comparison, if you look at 719, which is Human Services down at Yankton, that was a fund that really that $3.3 million exists because of the land sales we've done at Yankton at the HSC campus the last few years. And so if you go back prior to 2011, we really didn't keep a fund in that manner. And now there's $3.3 million in there from a series of land sales, and it generated about $80,000 in interest last year that we paid out to Human Services. And so we took assets in Yankton that weren't being utilized, sold them for $3.3 million with one sale yet to close, and then those interest and dividends go to support that agency. And so the same thing is what is being proposed with House Bill 1209 for Star Academy. If the facility is sold, those proceeds will go into that account 717, and then the interest and dividends will go back to Department of Corrections on an annual basis. And so we do this, as you can see from that sheet, with all of the regental institutions and other endowed institutions that were set up in 1889. And so that's just a kind of a brief overview of school and public lands, the trust funds that we have, why the money is there, and how the proceeds are paid out. With that, I'll stand by for questions.
All right. Thank you very much. Any other proponents for House Bill 1209? Proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is A.J. Franken, Office of the Governor. The bill before you today, 1209, really arises out of a declining juvenile population in corrections. If you look back, 2006, there were 931 youth under the jurisdiction of the DOC, and that had been steadily declining for years. Fast forward 10 years, by fiscal year 16, there were 474 youth under the jurisdiction of DOC. Star Academy in particular, as time grew on, the cost of operating that facility as a juvenile facility grew. When we had, you know, a population around 200, that daily rate would reflect out to more around $103. But with the declining population there, by fiscal year 15, the year preceding closing, the daily costs for housing and youth at this facility were around $282 a day. If you compare that to our other private, our private in-state group care, in fiscal year 17, that ranges from $122 to $168. Or for intensive psychiatric residential treatment, it would be 336. But just to note that the Star Academy facility was not housing those types of intensive residential treatment services for all their juveniles there. And so what we had facing us was an inefficient system of housing these youth at the Star Academy, and the costs were just no longer made sense there. The Star Academy itself is much like a small city. It requires specialized staff for operation of its own water treatment facility, wastewater treatment facility, and biomass plant for heat and domestic hot water. As the population declined, it was evident that this type of facility just didn't make sense. The bill before you today gives a couple of options. First is a sale at auction, the second is for allowing for a lease or use agreement or management agreement. There's currently a RFP in the works to see what kind of proposals might be out there for an entity to take over the facility, whether that be for treatment or recreation or other purposes. But the goal of this bill would be to put this property back onto the tax rolls and put to beneficial use. Before looking at this bill and looking at the RFP process, we did put out feelers to other state agencies, and there was no interest in operating this facility. Its location makes it historically difficult to staff because the workforce in that area is limited, and so that was always an issue facing Star Academy, and we believe that would continue if it was operated by some other state agency. And so at this time, we believe that the best way to proceed would be to dispose of this property and to place the money from this property into the trust so that it can benefit juvenile training programs, correction programs into the future. And with that, I'd stand by for questions.
All right. Any other proponent testimony for House Bill 1209? Any further proponent testimony for House Bill 1209? Is there any opponent testimony for House Bill 1209? Any opponent testimony for House Bill 1209? Going once, going twice, any opponent testimony for House Bill 1209? Hearing none, no need to rebut yourselves, gentlemen. I think we will close public testimony on House Bill 1209, open it up to committee questions at this time. Senator Peters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question in regards to the trust fund and the going into the corrections juvenile training programs. If we have no more children within the Department of Corrections, I mean, we still have kids in corrections and they're placed in private placement or they're in a variety of different diversion programs. What are the going to be the future uses of this trust fund?
And Mr. Chairman, so the money would still go to Department of Corrections, and I believe it may have the governor's office if they know what the rates are, but they still pay a per-person rate, you know, for those placements. So if those people are placed in a private facility or a nonprofit facility, I think they still incur expenses on a per-person rate, reimbursement rate, so they could use the funds to offset those costs.
Mr. Chair,
follow-up?
Can we make sure that we get that, like the plan for the money? Like if that's the intended use of the money, I'd like to see that is actually the plan.
Mr. Chairman, and I can follow up too on a regular basis. After the land sales at Yankton a few years ago, as example, Representative Hunhoff asked, and then we had a GOAC hearing where we discussed the trust funds and did verify, because the money from the HSC campus goes to Department of Social Services, which is a very large agency, and so we did follow up to make sure that was actually in the right account and was for the benefit of the facility in Yankton, and constitutionally and statutorily can continue to do that with these funds as well and work with Department of Corrections.
And if I can follow up one more time.
Yes.
I appreciate that. But if we can get I'm not opposed to the bill. I will move the bill, but I guess I would like to see how this fits into the budget of the Department of Corrections, or how this fits in, because now we're talking about money, and there is a plan, we know it, the governor's office knows it, we just don't. So if I'm seeing communication from folks, so as long as we get it in writing somewhere, I guess that's all I'm asking for. Not anything today, but by the time we have to talk about it on the floor, I'd like to have the information in hand.
All right, any other questions? Senator Nesiba.
Mr. Chair, I'm just curious. I understand that for a variety of reasons we haven't done a legal, evaluation of the value of the property. But could you give an appraisal? That's the word I'm looking for, Senator Cronin, appraisal. Can you give me just a ballpark estimate of what that is worth? It does seem like they're really, it seems like a really beautiful piece of real estate that's probably pretty valuable.
Mr. Chairman, we have not hired an appraiser yet. Usually we hire an appraiser an appraisal for this type of property would be several thousand dollars, and so usually we wait till after legislation passes. We just put the protection in there that it's a minimum of the appraised price for the sale. I don't have a good comparable for Star Academy because of the buildings and facilities. I deal a lot more with land, so 182 acres of land down there, I would have a pretty good value. I'm not sure if the governor's office has a number estimate that they want to use. We usually hesitate to put a number on that because it could be anybody's guess until you get in there with an appraiser and start looking at the maintenance and repair. And not to go to a bill tomorrow morning again, but the Rushmore Tech building will be up tomorrow morning here. Their risk management's gone in and done some evaluations, and you know, there's a variety of issues, and I don't know what those are because I have not been in the building when it was used for juvenile corrections. And so having not been in there myself and knowing what the value of those facilities might be, it's certainly a beautiful piece of property and could have, you know, million or millions of dollars of value, as has been said. But until you actually get in there and make sure you look at the kind of like a building inspection, until you get in there and look at it, it's really tough to determine what the value of the building could be.
Any other questions? Senator White.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I guess I when I look at this and you have a piece of property out in the middle of a valued area like this, are there any contingency conditions of the sale, or will there be any contingency conditions of the sale, number one? Number two, county ordinances that would affect the sale on what the uses could be or could not be. Do you see that playing anything into the value of what would be impacted here?
Mr. Chairman, to go to the county ordinance question, once it becomes privately owned or would become privately owned, they would have to follow and abide by any county ordinances in relation to that property. It's been an ongoing issue with some other land down in that same area. We had to have replatted and took a period of years trying to get an easement from the Forest Service, but we were very careful. We always want to follow the county process and procedures and not be one to, you know, to get outside of that process, because once we sell it, the new owner would have to follow by that. And so that's important for the appraisal process, that we make sure within those confines, because if we're not, then they're we don't want to misrepresent something. And so if somebody's going to buy it and use it for that purpose, we've worked with Custer County on the platting of that other piece of property and access and making sure we follow all their zoning rules. And so it's certainly something we do anytime we sell any piece of property down there. As far as contingencies go, usually we've got the couple of options. There is the RFP, so there's a lease option or a sale option. When we go to sale, I don't have any contingencies on it at this time. We certainly could develop some or come up with some, as long as they were, fit within a logical reason. We would not put up a contingency that says, only Senator Wick may buy this property. We're very careful with that sort of things, because our ultimate goal, or my ultimate job as your real estate agent in this case, is to maximize the amount of money you can get at the sale.
Well,
follow up.
Again, a contingency usually is based on a county ordinance of some type or another, and as far as logging in that area or something like that. As far as you know, there isn't anything that's available there at this time, right?
Mr. Chairman, we actually did we work with Department of Ag. We did a timber sale there last summer, and so the area has been logged. We sold the timber off of it, as well as that other piece I was mentioning. And so it's not a huge revenue generator. I could find that out for you. I know the other piece was about $3,000. This piece was maybe it was more than that, but not a lot more. So we get the property cleaned up and make a little bit of money for the agency.
Any other committee questions on House Bill 1209? Senator Nessebe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still new in figuring this out. Is it, whenever we do a land sale like this, do we ever allow for a public comment period, or for those, in this case, people of Custer County, to have any say or have any conversation or input about the sale of this property? And I'm just asking that generally, Mr. Chair, of how that works, or how it, and I guess ask more specifically how that would work in this case.
Or Mr. Chairman, I could answer that. When we do an exchange, we can exchange property without going through the legislative process. Those we do public comments and advertise for 4 weeks and have a 30-day period. With sales, we have not. in the past, to my knowledge, ever had a public comment period. To some effect, the legislative hearing here today or in the House on the other side would serve as the public comment period if, you know, elected officials, county commission, city council, you know, if they had input or thoughts, this would kind of serve as a public hearing, obviously, where they would have input on it. I don't know if the governor's office has had other meetings or other discussions, you know, as far as public input. For me, it's once the legislature would approve the sale, the governor's, as you read the legislation, says the governor requests and the commissioner of school and public land shall sell. And so if the legislature approves the legislation and the governor requests it, it says shall instead of may. And so it's you know, I proceed with the sale at that point. Do you have anything you want to add?
Anything else to add to that?
Mr. Chair, if I may, just to add to that, with regards to the RFI and RFP, Custer Area Economic Development, as well as the City of Custer, have been engaged in those discussions, and Economic Development has submitted some proposal interest in the property, and so we would also intend on, in that process, having locals be involved in the selection process. So, thank you.
Senator Cronin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Secretary Bruner, if the city of Custer or the county of Custer would want to purchase this, how would that work?
Mr. Chair, I'll have to look really quick here. I believe that there was a provision in here originally for sale to a government entity that we put in most of our land sale bills. If I remember correctly, the House amended that part out of it. Yes, that's correct. The House amended that part out so that it would have to be sold at public auction.
Okay.
Senator Partridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I'm understanding you correctly, there are really three options: keep it, lease it, or sell it. Is that correct?
That is correct. And we would evaluate the proposals, and whether that's a lease or a lease to purchase or a management agreement, we would weigh the benefit to the state under any of those proposals. If those proposals do not come back positive or we don't think the long-term benefits of that arrangement would be best, then we would propose to go to a straight sale, or through that process we may identify a purchaser that would be interested in buying it at the auction. So, thank you.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So, by constitution, if we do sell it or do some sort of contract for deed or lease and then purchase, whatever it might be, the funds go into this Department of Juvenile Corrections Fund. You've identified 717. Do they have to go into 717, or can they go anywhere we designate?
I can speak to that. This particular property, we have tagged towards that trust fund. There is a portion of the property that was received as a gift from Custer County, or from the city of Custer, rather, and it was transferred to the state through a purchase. I would say we haven't been able to do yet any sort of analysis to determine whether that was at fair market value or whether that transfer between the city and the state was in part a gift. If it is a gift, the Constitution, Article 7, Section 8, requires that any gift has to be held in trust for the object of the gift. And so in that case, it would be juvenile corrections training. And so I think it's not incredibly clear whether we could get away with not putting this into trust, but going the safe route and maintaining the corpus of this property as benefiting the juvenile training programs. We believe that the need for juvenile corrections will always exist, and so it seems fitting that this property used for that would be set aside for that purpose.
So, Mr. Chair, you're saying that it's not clear that we need to put it into the trust fund?
I think that's correct.
Mr. Chairman, so Article 8, Section 7 of the Constitution says any land, essentially any property gifted for any educational or charitable purpose remains a perpetual trust. So anything that it clearly falls under that is very easy to define. The School for the Deaf, which we'll have up later or tomorrow, is a perfect example of that. It was a territorial gift. It's very clear that there is no other possible diversion of those funds allowed under the Constitution. Some of these older land sales going back, have to pull the year on when some of this was acquired. It involves looking at some of the old session laws to see if there were any general funds appropriated or what some of those purchases were made. The land was gifted to the city of Custer. There was some value put on it when they transferred it to the state. So we know we paid some money for it, but if part of that is a gift, it's similar to Redfield where it could have mixed where half of it may be trust or half of it may not.
Just for clarification, you're saying the sale of the property should go into the overall into the 717, but what you're talking about that you're not clear on is the gifting part that came from Custer. The rest you're crystal clear on.
Mr. Chairman, if we wanted to do a more in-depth analysis and try and look at some of those funds or try and figure out the appraised value in the early 1900s and try and figure out a proportional or a ratio of to what is trust and what is not trust, we could go back and look at that if you were looking to divert some of that money. The reason not to do, or the reason I would encourage the money to go into trust, is because it's an asset under Department of Corrections. So the Department of Corrections have this asset that's been under their management. As far as an account to put that money into where they would continue to receive the benefit of that asset as part of getting rid of surplus state property, it's a natural fit. You can never go wrong by putting money into trust, and then that money is there and available for Department of Corrections benefit. There certainly is the potential that some of this land, there's a 10-acre piece for sure that does not have trust protections out of 182 acres. So we could break all of that out, but if you start looking at what's the value of just 10 acres by itself versus the rest of the property, it's not, let's say it was $30,000 or $40,000. Well, that money would then be available for other purposes, but it's always, at least in the past, been the practice to put some of that money in the trust. Especially if you're talking about small amounts of money like that, it makes more sense to invest them for the long term so that we have those benefits for perpetuity.
Follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if we wanted to collectively, governor's office and legislature, let's say, move this entire thing into 799, would that be possible?
Mr. Chairman, no, because there would be part of it that if we did that in-depth analysis and found some differences there, it wouldn't necessarily put it into 799, but the legislature can direct some of those funds. Let's say that $40,000 was available, then I guess, yes, you could direct that to whatever fund you wanted anywhere in state government.
No, but couldn't we put the entire thing into the public building trust fund if we wanted to?
Mr. Chairman, it again goes to the old trust principles. So if the trust provisions are there, it has to go to the object of the trust. And so, when the city of Custer transferred it to the state for the use of the Board of Charities and Corrections, it would have to fit within that framework under that Article 8, Section 7 of the Constitution. The 40,000, the small 10-acre tract I talked about, yes, you could put that into that fund.
Any further questions, Senator Nesseba?
Mr. Chair and Secretary, do we have we been approached by a potential buyer for this property?
There has been some interest expressed, but nothing with a number or nothing very solid at this time. So.
Any other questions, Senator Cronin?
care? Can we have about a 5-minute recess?
I would concur with that. We'll be in recess for 5 minutes.
All right, recess is over. Hope everybody put their mats back in the corners. And we are back from recess, ready to go with Senate Appropriations. We are back in order, and with the information we have developed during questioning, the chair will defer action on House Bill 1209 until our next meeting. With that,
Mr. Chair,
Senator Partridge,
I would move we adjourn.
So that means we will defer action on House Bill 1210 until our next meeting as well, I guess. We have a motion to adjourn. It's been seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
We are adjourned.